Good morning, good afternoon, or good night, wherever you are listening to this and whatever time of the day. Welcome to episode 16 of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends.
Whoop whoop!
Oh, straight away. That's fine. Haven't even got to introduce the lady and she's all over. So, do you know what? Here's the other thing that we didn't discuss.
Yeah.
How do I interview you? I don't. Is it a performer's name? Is it that you do it? Tell the people your name.
Oh, that's a good one. I get confused with that. Leonie McDonough.
Fine. I didn't want to give out your real name in case you get like an awkward Facebook stalker thing out of it or something. Grand.
I do get lots of... Have you seen my face? This is a quick tangent, but I think it's a very funny Facebook profile, but also every second day I get a friend request of a random man with whom I've no mutual friends.
Cool. I get that too, but I think they're trying to get me money from like an Arabian prince or something who's passed away, but he's left it to me in his will. But they're contacting me through Facebook.
Oh, that's so nice of them, isn't it?
Yeah, because nobody uses Hotmail anymore, so they're good.
Oh, that sounds good on them. Oh, so, good, Darren. I'm glad to hear they're following up with
that. I'm still waiting on the check, but whatever.
It'll come, don't worry.
So yes, we are sitting currently in the comedy kitchen, which is weird because normally these are recorded in my kitchen, but yours actually sounds much nicer.
Does it?
It does. So,
well, now, can I also, just to be pedantic, we're not actually in the comedy kitchen. That's in the west wing of my massive house.
Grand. Yeah, we're over in East Belfast. Whoop, whoop. Are there massive houses? Yeah, we're over here in Leonie's kitchen, so we're recording the podcast here today, but it is the, well, let's call it the address of the comedy kitchen.
Yes.
Cool. So the comedy kitchen is what? We'll pitch that first.
Well, as you pointed out, it's not actually a kitchen.
Don't ruin the showbiz.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Okay. We're in the comedy kitchen.
We're in the comedy kitchen.
Yeah.
Welcome to the comedy kitchen.
We'll say it's in the servant's kitchen.
Oh, imagine having that much money.
Oh, I think, but you know, the moral dilemma of having servants as well.
But also, if you had loads of money, what would you spend it on? Would you get a chef? Sometimes I think, a personal chef.
Yes.
That'd be good. I don't know, would you get a cleaner? I'm not sure about that.
No, I'd feel bad. I mean, the comedy, would it be bad if you put the chef in the comedy kitchen? He'd be in the road when you're trying to do gigs.
Well, also, comedy kitchen has absolutely nothing to do about kitchen stuff either.
I know that too, but I mean, if he's in there, he's just in the, he's at the sink.
No, he's not going to just live in the back kitchen, Darren. He's going to come around in the evening and cook dinner.
I know, but
massage me and rub my feet.
This is taking a turn. That's not a chef.
Okay, back on track.
Back on track. So we're in East Belfast. Leonie, you are the purveyor, host, the owner of the comedy kitchen.
Yeah.
Cool. What is Comedy Kitchen?
So, Comedy Kitchen is going to be the biggest in the world ever online YouTube broadcast program featuring the best of stand-up talent in Northern Ireland and all over the world.
Okay.
Ambitious much, but you know, let's think big.
How many Comedy Kitchens have we done so far?
So, we had a rocky first season where we learned a lot of things. So, there were 6 episodes in that first season and now we're launching season 2 in 2020.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, obviously, the world is your oyster.
The world is your oyster.
Possible audience, 7 billion.
Yeah.
But for the live studio audience it's recorded for, how many people fit in the kitchen?
I think we max fit 14 people into the kitchen.
You put 14 people out there?
It's a bit of a squash.
Wow.
But if the weather's good, you can open the back door. Some people can sit near the sink.
Okay, that makes sense.
There is a bit of squash. And also the tech team. Because here's the thing, it needs a lot of tech help. I thought, we'll just broadcast on YouTube, it'll be dead easy, but actually it's not dead easy at all.
No, there's webcams.
There's a whole lot, and we have like studio lights in there, and there's 2-3 of us, me the fourth, working on Comedy Kitchen. Okay. Not that I want to give the magic away, but not that that's magic either, but yeah, it's a much bigger effort than I initially thought.
It's not really magic, it's more technology, but...
That's the word for Darren. Very good.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit of magic as well.
Yeah, I didn't wave my arms. I plugged it in.
Oh, that was it. Yeah.
Oh, man. But so, Leonie, as I'm going to point out as well, you definitely don't have a Belfast accent.
No.
No, I'm going to guess Dundalk. Were you?
What?
I'm only joking.
That is not your best material,
I'm a
Darren.
Comedian. It's fine. I'm improvising here.
I'm from Galway.
It's better when I write.
Okay.
Leonie, you're from Galway. Yeah. You are here in Belfast. What happened? Did you move up for the weather?
I got pregnant.
In Galway?
I got pregnant with a man who lives in Belfast. I feel like I've told this story quite a lot. Anyway, I arrived up in Belfast with a big bump, about 6 months pregnant, ready to move in with Ken, the baby daddy. And I've lived here happily ever after.
That sounds like you made all
Belfast.
That up on the spot.
No, this is all spot on true. I did arrive up 6 months pregnant.
Right.
And I got pregnant when I was in college as well. Anyway, there you go.
Welcome to Belfast.
And then I arrived up to Belfast. But I've had such a brilliant time here. I love Belfast. I am Belfast's biggest fan.
Cool. I thought it was going to be one of those ones because like I'm from Newry and I know like a lot of women in the south would come to Newry to have the babbies because it was cheaper.
Yeah.
Because you don't have an NHS in the south, so.
Yeah, well, that's not why. It was because the dad was here. I mean, I would have gone wherever the dad was because I was like, I'm pregnant now, let's mind this thing.
Yeah, you're you like, know, I need
can you look after me for a while, please?
You're like, I need a hand.
I need a help and it's yours. I mean, I'm 99% sure it's yours. So let's just go for this, okay? Thanks. That's a joke, everyone. I was 95% sure.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, terrible, terrible.
No, not
but
Jesus.
But then I had a...
he was an immaculate conception. Yeah.
Oh, that's right, he was, wasn't he? But I had the baby in the Royal and had... having a baby here was a really good experience. I just felt so looked after. And I fell in love with Belfast. And community here is really good. People I hang out with, circle is good. Quality of life is good. Being an artist, being a mom...
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
One of the things as well, even though you're doing the Comedy Kitchen, your irons are in many fires. You're not strictly comedy.
Yeah, I'm a bit poly that way, yeah.
Right, you're dancer, whatever you do, MC,
yes.
Artist, what else?
Yeah, well, I used to say I was a dance artist because I choreograph or do movement direction, but I do less and less of that.
Okay.
I hate saying it, but I've danced for 20 years and I've made loads of work as a maker with Pony Dance. Ponydance.com is still a website that we're essentially dormant or disbanded. But we made loads of good work. We did lots of good stuff with that and I'm really proud of all that and had a great time. And then I was not that interested in making dance anymore. Was how
fair
it
enough.
Boiled down. But also with Pony Dance, I was always making comedy. I've always had an interest in making comedy. So I guess at some point along the way I went, wouldn't it be easier to do stand-up comedy instead of sweating your end off in a studio for hours?
Practicing?
Yeah, it's just there's so much practice in dance. There's just so many hours and hours of dance. So I thought, stand-up would be dead easy, I'll do that. And then realised, stand-up is not dead easy, it's really hard as well. But at least I'm not killing myself on my knees. My knees just get... I'm 38, my knees... I sound like an old lady. I'm not complaining, but the knees start to hurt.
I was going to say, was it a shock whenever you thought, okay, I don't have to do hours of practice in a studio anymore where if you fall over or it goes bad, nobody sees?
Yeah.
And then you realise when you're doing stand-up comedy, you still have to do hundreds of hours of practice.
Hundreds of hours.
In front of a live studio audience. And when it goes bad,
it
fucking goes bad.
It was a bit of a shock. It was a bit of a... And I was thinking, why aren't people really laughing and why aren't I really good at this? And then I was like, because you haven't put in hours and hours of work for it, you twit.
Yeah.
So you you have to put in hours and hours.
Do you remember your first gig or where was it?
Do I? I remember a few of my early, because I actually haven't done loads of, I've done more and my New Year's resolution is to just get out and do gigs because there's a part of me that goes, chickens out.
Yeah, fair enough. That happens.
And also with Comedy Kitchen, I thought, because I'm a mom, going out to do gigs at nighttime is not ideal for me because I'd rather be home minding my child.
That's
and true. Or paying for babysitters or blah, blah, blah. It's just like, if I just have a gig in my own house, that would be easy. And that's not easy either. The bottom line here is that nothing is that easy.
That's true.
But then also I just have to go, well, get over it, Leonie, and do a bit of work. So now I'm working. Now I'm working much harder at it.
Yeah, but I know you said it's hard work, but whenever it goes nice, the rewards are great. I mean, it's a nice feeling.
And when you have a good gig, you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
And when people ask you to do gigs, you're like, yes.
Yes, you're getting. I think you're getting somewhere when you're being booked instead of asking.
When I'm being booked, but you also still have to ask.
Oh yeah, I mean, everybody has to ask.
Everybody has to ask, and I'm more determined to do that because my big fat ego will go, you're a performer for so long, Leonie. I mean, honestly, you shouldn't have to be asking. And then I have to tell that ego to, piss off.
Yeah, you're like, or we won't get booked anywhere. So
so get over yourself there.
I think it gets to the point where hopefully if you get to a level where it's going well enough and people know, I'm happy to say that I think sometimes I get booked because I'm at least solid.
Yeah, you're reliable.
Yeah,
like,
I'm not going to steal the show. I'm not going to die.
Yeah. He'll fill a nice gap in the middle there.
I'm like that lad who plays for the football team that they'll never sell because he's just been solid for years. Like, I'm 33, the right leg's fucked, but put me on for 20 minutes and I'll deliver.
Yeah,
so I think hopefully it's that way. And people are probably listening to this now going, I've seen you die. Yeah, no. And I have, but thankfully my deaths are fewer and far between, which is great.
Yeah, same here. Because I've had a few gigs where you just die. You just have to trot it out. You have to season it.
Yeah.
But it also, you do have to ask. It's that thing of, you just have to pursue it. I put this thing up on Instagram lately because I thought it was really important, that thing of getting out of your own way. Get out of the way of yourself. And that's...
Yeah.
That's a really important lesson for me. And I've heard it before and you kind of forget the meaning of it, but the thing is, just help... Be your own best friend. Just help yourself a lot.
I have a thing about gigs where I won't allow myself to... When people be like, that was brilliant, I'm like, it was alright.
Fine. Yeah.
It's fine. It worked.
Mm.
But if I think maybe once or twice in my life I've gone to myself, you're good at this, and then I've had the fucking worst death ever. When you're not, I remember chatting to someone in the company of another comedian, and the person said, just like, do you guys ever be nervous before shows? And I went, I'm nervous before every show.
Same here.
And the other comic went, I'm never nervous. And I went, that's why I'm better at this than you.
Yeah. Oh, good. And I love hearing you say that, because I get so nervous as
well. Of course.
And Robbie McShane, who's resident on Comedy Kitchen. Yeah. Comedy Kitchen was actually his idea initially, and we argue about that, but I swear it was his idea and I've acted upon it. And I see him for that last 5 minutes, he goes pale. I'm like, yes, I'm not the... Because I'm... Bleh.
Yeah.
For the day, you're okay. For the last hour, you're so-so. And that last 10 minutes... It's the same with dance. I remember even with dance. And with dance, it's the fear of, oh, I'm going to forget my 5, 6, 7, 8s. I'm going to forget the move that comes over that thing. When I do my leg, what's that move again? And you want to get sick on yourself for that last 5 minutes.
Music starts and it doesn't matter anymore.
And then you get out there. But actually, I think sometimes dance is harder, because if you blank on a move...
Yeah.
You've nothing.
There's no improv.
Yeah, and you're looking at the three people dancing beside you, and you're like, oh, I look like such a dick. And I was always blanking.
But you have, with comedy-wise, I mean, thankfully... Well, one of the reasons that I get out and I tell a joke straight away is to settle my own nerves. So some people have that...
Get a result here.
Some people have that confidence to get out and have a bit of space of, hi, yeah, I'm such and such, and they're setting up. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I need a laugh, and then I go, and chill. So, which is why I think it was Lavery's we were at there last. Yeah, so that's an opener. I go out, I have an opener that is the first thing I say.
And Ken is always, my son's dad is always saying to me, because he does a lot, he's a circus performer, he does loads of stuff. And he's, you know, I have a gig coming up and he goes, okay, what's your opener? He's always asking me that.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have it and sometimes I don't. That's because I like, have you done clown training? I've done loads of clown training.
No, that's probably a bit.
Oh, I loved clown training. It's absolutely torturous. Like, it's brutal, because but it's learning how to fail, and it's learning how to be comfortable on stage. I've got nothing, so you have to find something from nothing.
Okay.
So it's finding absolute peace with making an idiot out of yourself.
Oh, all right. I mean, maybe that would be good. Well, to be fair...
It's brilliant. I've done loads of it, and I think that's why I would broach stand-up. Because you have to have a certain ability not to fear failure, don't you?
Well, yeah, I mean...
A piece would dine on your arse.
Yeah, as I said to you, my previous entertaining life before I did comedy was I played drums in a punk band called Too Fat for Porn. So I was never afraid of making a dick out of myself. Because I was sitting behind my drum kit with my dyed pink hair.
I was afraid of making a dick out of myself, and now I'm not afraid of making a dick out of myself.
I wasn't. I think it was maybe because I was probably in my late teens, early 20s, and I was just like, I don't give a fuck.
Hey, is that also a male-female thing?
You think so?
Do you think that lads are much less afraid of making a dick out of themselves? Girls are much more conscious of it.
Maybe so.
From teenage years, however biological or definitely like societal influence.
Maybe so because of a girl. If you make a fool of yourself as a lady, people are just like, oh my God, what's she doing? But if one of the lads does it, you go, oh, he's a bit of a legend.
I think he's a bit of a legend. Yeah. It's a completely different attitude. So I think generally it's harder for women to make...
Probably so.
Arguably. And also I heard, like, with street performers, you know, because a lot of street performers has a certain formula, and they would get volunteers, and generally, it's changing now, but generally with street performers, they would get men up, because it's much easier, because you have to kind of essentially take the piss out of someone. You're making someone very vulnerable, but it's much easier to do with men than with women. Historically, contextually, women are an oppressed demographic, so you don't want to be seen to be punching down with your jokes.
Oh yeah.
So it's much easier getting men up. That was kind of a thing. It's changing. It's all changing. But I think that is the context for it.
I think it's probably changing. Maybe hopefully in a better way, because stand-up comics aren't getting up and doing that. You know, my mother-in-law, or my wife. Because that's an easy. You're like, are you making fun of yourself, or are you making fun of that person?
Yeah.
So I always find my bits of my comedy that works, and I would say to people. When people get up and they tell a story about how great they are, I'm like, this isn't funny. I want to hear about you failing.
And then we want to hear that because we want to relate to that.
Yeah, because I say to people, I'm like, look, people go out and work all week and they work really hard and they come to your comedy night. They have had a shit week. You need to prove to them your week has been more shit to make them feel better.
Yeah, that's kind of
so I get up and talk about what a disaster I am and the stupid shit I do and the silly things I've done in foreign countries. And
they all relate to it.
They all relate to it.
Yeah.
But also I'm proving to them that, look, lads, your life isn't that bad when you hear what I've done. But hopefully in a nice way, not in a Jesus Christ.
No, but that's
we need an intervention.
Yeah, that's hitting the balance between funny and being vulnerable. There's something about vulnerability on stage that's really, we want to see that. We're really attracted to that. I mean, if you're cocksure, fantastic, it gets a bit. It depends on how clever you are about it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, there's layers to all these things, so it depends on how.
Well, yeah, man, it's with comedy, it's a constant learn. I was thinking about this the other day.
Mm.
Next month, I've been doing comedy for 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you going to have a 10-year anniversary party?
No, but I should be better at this. That's what I'm thinking.
And they, because, well, maybe next month you'll be really good because they reckon it takes 10 years. Martha Graham famously said it takes 10 years to make a dancer. Malcolm Gladwell, he goes on about the 10,000 hours. To be really good at something, you need to do 10,000 hours, and that's about about 10 years worth of practice.
I definitely haven't done 10,000 hours of stage time.
Well, then you need to do 10,000 hours, and then you'll be really good.
Bollocks.
Apparently.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just...
How many hours have you done? I mean, if you think an average gig is, what, 15 minutes? How many gigs have you done?
I don't know.
Pen and paper out here and crunch some numbers for you, Darren.
There are people who write these things out, but there's times where I don't do gigs for months, and then I do 15 in 4 weeks, you know what I mean? Or 3 weeks. So I don't know, because there's tours and there's travel and... I don't even want to guess. I think when I started, I was tracking gigs. But then it was tracking everybody.
But it's not just your gig time. It's how many hours you're standing holding your hairbrush, looking in the mirror, practicing your material. Do you do that?
No.
Do you record yourself on your phone?
No, I only record sets when I'm live. Because it's not up to me to decide if it's funny. It's the crowd's job.
What? You have to stab a guess that it's going to be funny though, don't you?
Well, I have to guess.
Yeah.
But I'm only estimating that it's funny. The problem with comedy and also the amazing thing about comedy is an instantly reviewable art form. So you say something.
Instant feedback. Yeah, instant feedback.
Yeah, if it's a good joke, they laugh.
Instant gratification.
If it's a bad joke, they don't laugh. And if it's a really bad joke, you're going to get heckled.
Yeah, true.
So, and sometimes when it's a good joke, you get heckled. So.
Do you think it's a bit addictive, like hearing laughter, that you get a good release from it?
Oh, yeah.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Would you clinically call it addictive?
Stage time is addictive. I watch, when you listen to podcasts or you watch documentaries, the recent one I watched, even though I'm not big into a stand-up, Kevin Hart released a series on Netflix, and he talks about, even though he's making millions of dollars doing movies and stuff, he needs to do stand-up. So he will.
Because that's where he gets his.
So he will be making a movie somewhere, and then
There is no instant gratification in that.
And he'll go find a comedy club.
The most unglamorous thing. So he'll go get some laughs and get a kick out of that.
Yeah, he'll be like, oh, I've got new material. Can I try a new five at your comedy night? And they're like, well, yeah, because you're doing
Kevin Hart.
You're doing Madison Square Garden. Of course you can.
Yeah.
But he still does little clubs. He just shows up and is like, can I do five?
Because that's where you trot out your material, I guess. But also I've heard another comedian talk about now, because of phones and video phoning, that they, big names, will go to a club, Kevin Hart style, go, can I just do 5-10 minutes, try some new stuff? And then some git in the audience will film it, stick it up, and he's like, that's me being practicing and me being rubbish, and now it's up on the internet.
There is a thing now some comedy clubs are doing around the world where you have to check your phone in.
Yeah, and I've been at clubs where they go, no recording. And in LA, when I was over in LA, they were absolutely no recording.
No, there's a thing I see they do, which is you get your phone, you get like a little wallet for it, and they seal it up and keep it for you. And you get a little tag, so your tag is for your phone.
Like cloakroom your phone.
Cloakroom your phone, but it means that it's a completely phone-free environment.
That's good, isn't it?
Maybe you've noticed this when you're hosting. Have you ever seen somebody on their phone while you're on stage? It's kind of scary because their face lights up.
I know, you hear Paul Curry joking about that. Your face is glowing. Yeah. I can see. Yeah.
It's kind of scary. It looks like the place is suddenly haunted. Because you'd be standing talking.
And it is so alarmingly notable.
Yeah, because it goes ding and you're fucked, you know.
Yeah. But you can pull them off when you're hosting or what.
Yeah.
But it would wreck us. You can wreck a set if you let it or whatever.
Well, there is a great thing as well, and something that I focus on probably to my detriment, or it's a bad thing. Damon Clark, the fantastic.
Yeah, he's great. Right,
do you ever see some of his comics he does?
I saw one thing yesterday on good old Insta. Because he's just interspersed his set with some
cartoons. Damon has a brilliant comic where it shows a crowd laughing. And it's a comedian on stage. and it's a crowd are loving it, they're having a great time, and then it says, this is what you see, and then it said, this is what a comedian sees, and it's the same picture, but everyone is blacked out except for one person who's not laughing about three rows back.
Oh, it's so true.
And I was like, I did Laveridge last week. I thought it went very well.
Yeah, but there was one guy, one miserable. Someone, was it you? Someone referenced him.
There was one guy in the front and he hated me.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But everybody else was digging it.
I know, but he's the one you see.
And I just out of my peripheral vision, all I could see was this bastard. Yeah. I was like...
But you can also, I have trained myself, because that's the same. You have one scour face and you just have to go, I have to ignore that one person and just look past them.
Yeah,
it is really hard. But you have to just strictly teach yourself not to be bothered by it. Says Leonie with her authoritative voice. But it is really hard to do that because they just stick out like a sore thumb.
Well, this is good. This is nice behind the curtain stuff for people. Because, well, I think people think we walk on stage and you just go, oh yeah, you're just coming up with it. I'm like, no, no. No, it's called a routine. I've written this, but
I've thought about it. I've crafted a bit. But sometimes you wing it. Well, Ronan Linsky, he's a brilliant comedian. Because I was talking, I had this kind of conversation with him, and he says, "Nah, I'm not that structured. I'm up there. You have to wing it a bit." He's pretty adamant that you shouldn't be too set.
I'm not too rigid in the basis that people. I think when people see me more than once, they think they've seen a different set, but it's because I don't remember my things in any sequence. So I know my own material.
So you'll just pick it out, whatever comes to your head next.
I'll pick it where it flows best.
Oh, yeah.
So or if I'm talking to somebody from MCing and they give me a nice keyword, I'm like, I have a bit of that. And then you make it look like you're on the spot doing it.
Yeah. You have to do a lot of making it look like you're on the spot, don't you?
Yeah.
And sometimes you are doing it on the spot.
Yeah, but that's the MCing thing. Oh, this is something.
But also that's doing lots of gigs. Yeah. Lots of gigs. Someone responds in a certain way to your joke and you go, oh, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. I need a little bit of material ready for that one. Because I had jokes about GAA down, because I did a gig in Galway in the Russian Dove, but I did it during the summer, so the audience was full of Americans.
Yeah.
And they were like, what's GAA? And I thought, OMG, I have no material ready about what's GAA. So I think I ended up saying, listen, if a guy says he plays for County, just get into bed with him because he's made of good stuff. But I couldn't, I didn't have anything ready to go, well, GAA is only the most... How can you not know what GAA was? And realised, of course they could not know what GAA was.
You're like, jumping quick, he's in peak physical condition.
So, but I just have to go, okay, I need to have stuff ready for when that comes up.
Yeah. No, it does happen.
Yeah.
But one of the other things, as well as doing stand-up and walking out, doing your sets, doing your 15, 20 minutes, you do a lot of the same stuff I do, which is MC work.
Yeah, I love doing that.
And but the thing is, I host comedy nights, but you host burlesque, cabaret.
Yeah.
So that's great fun. You come out.
Oh, it's loads. But it's a completely. I find for me, it's a completely different job altogether. Because I think, oh yeah, I'll use my stand up material as an MC, and actually they don't cross connect. I can't.
No.
I find that's not what the audience needs. That's not my job here at all. Even though I'm standing here on my own on a stage with a microphone, you'd think they're the same thing, and they are absolutely not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go and do a 10-minute set, I am rehearsed. I'm ready. I've got room for flexibility, but I've got my joke set. And when I go on MC, I have a few notions of what I might do with the audience, but essentially I'm there to be their friend and wing it with them.
Yeah, I like that.
See, and I that is loads of fun. And sometimes I am absolutely rocket good at it. And other times I've looked at myself back going, why are you hanging around on stage for so long, Leonie? Get off!
Yeah, bring the guy on.
Bring the guy on! Because I'm up on stage going, I'm looking for things to play with here. 5 minutes later, I haven't found anything. I think it's time to bring an act on, you dick.
But that point is you're trying not to drain the energy out of the room.
Yeah, you're just trying to make them all relax. Because someone said to me before, listen, you just treat an MC gig like you're in your sitting room, you're friends with everybody, you just want them to have a good time, and it's absolutely not about you.
Exactly.
And I get that. Though I have to kind of go, no, you remember, it's not about you, get off the stage, you bloody hog.
Well, one of the nice things about MCing is, what in comedy context is, if you get to say something, you're getting back up again, so it's grand.
Yeah, you're getting back up again.
There's nothing worse than coming off after a set and going, I forgot to do all that stuff.
I know, I've done that several times.
Or I got sidetracked
times.
And I've done that somewhere else.
Yeah, I've done that several times. That's where rehearsing comes in. But also I find as MCing, that the best MCing is not with prepared material. The best things I have as an MC is if I play with the audience.
Yeah.
If I find a bit of crack in that first 5 minutes, if I get a bit of a buzz going with them, you can refer to that again and again and again. And then all night long, and they feel like, oh, we're part of something, and they are part of something unique, that, oh, this is not happening every night. It couldn't, because she's talking to X in the front or Tom and this relationship or whatever.
Have you emceed many comedy gigs, or you're more cabaret?
More cabaret. I haven't emceed many comedy gigs.
Okay, because here's
I did emcee one comedy gig and I wasn't very good.
Okay. I was going to say, here's something that's going to happen.
Tell me. I want to hear this.
I think it's true for a lot of people, and I think sometimes it's a real dent in the confidence where I emceed a gig one time and I come off stage and somebody went to me, "You were really funny." I was like, "Thanks very much." They're like, "Why don't you do comedy?" And I was just like, "I'm going to go to my car and cry now." But yeah, no, they were like, "You were one of the funniest up there. Why don't you do comedy?" And I was just
But also their expectations of you is not to be funny. Their expectations of you is to just introduce. And when I emcee cabaret, I look real glam. I do my hair. I got my lashes on. I look dead hot. I'm glam top. And then they don't expect me to be funny, really, I don't think.
Okay.
They just expect me to be a bit of crack jovial. They're not really expecting a whole lot of jokes. They just want me to introduce people.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I'm funnier, if I'm a bit outlandish or irreverent and all those things, which I go for, they're like, "Oh, we weren't expecting that out of Dolly Bird up there."
I just imagine a man with a cigar at the side of the stage going, "Get out there and make him look nice, honey."
It's kind of... But isn't it... You're kind of always figuring out the expectations of your audience.
Yeah.
Do you think about, like, every gig I'm going on in Derry, I'm playing Derry tonight, you're playing Derry tonight, I think about the kind of audience I'll have there. I'm playing Lavery's, I think about the kind of audience I'll have there. I think about that for every single gig. I go, "Oh, I'm in Galway, what's going to be there? Oh, I'm in Pug Uglies at the end of the month. I'm gonna go suss those out, see what it's like."
Yeah, well, I do that, and then also I get down, and if I'm on first, I'll have a look at the room, and if I'm on later in the gig, I'll watch everyone else.
Yeah, I'm same here. I'll be watching like a hawk.
Because I know sometimes when I've seen it happen, and like really good comics have suffered from this, like headliners who don't show up until halfway through the set, and then they'll talk about something that the MC's already talked about.
I know. You think,
and you're just like, "Oh no."
Yeah. And then you've kind of lost them. I lose faith in someone if I go, "Oh, you're going through the mill here."
Yeah, because then they're going, "Why aren't you laughing at that?" And they're like, "Because the guy before you said
this."
Yeah,
and you just didn't
bother your arse
And if I'm emceeing, I try and get down. No, it depends on the gig. Some gigs I'll try and get down and hang out in the dressing room with all the acts, and then you start developing material about them. Then you kind of come out and go, "Well, you saw her do this on stage, but backstage she's actually doing this. Ha, great." Yeah. You need a bit of that.
What I do whenever
otherwise
I do.
Otherwise, the audience. You're shortchanging the audience. You're not giving them the full.
Yeah, if I'm like, I present the biggest wee comedy club in the north, which is in McCooey's in Newry.
Yes, you were telling me about that.
And what I do, if we've got a stack lineup, so we did the 12 comedians at Christmas. We did one earlier in the year, which was 10 for 10 for 10, which was a tenner in 10 comedians doing 10 minutes.
Excellent.
So when
That's
we do
a lot
gigs
of minutes.
When we do gigs like that, I will watch every set.
Yeah.
And then if someone does well, I will do one joke that references their set.
Yes.
And then bring the next guy straight on.
Brilliant.
Because the energy's up. I'm letting them know that this one joke is the split between the sets.
Yeah.
And there's somebody new coming.
Yeah, brilliant.
Instead of just going and go, "That was amazing, next act." I get up and go, "Hey, blah, 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 he said that," and then you're
because you want to try and reference it, because thus it makes it
memorable.
It makes a whole lot of rehearsed material an authentic and unique experience for the audience.
Yeah.
And I am so into that. You're trying to reference what went on before, what's coming next, so... And sometimes I get it, sometimes I don't. But I definitely believe in you're trying to, making a unique experience for an audience, because that's the point of live performance. Otherwise, they can just watch TV.
Yeah, well, there is a certain degree of formula, and because I do a lot of MCing, I always do it. Number one, it's not your show.
It's not your show. Get off.
At best, you're allowed to be the second funniest. That's your rule. It's not your show, so don't try and steal the show. And there's nothing sadder than watching an MC try and steal a show.
Oh, it's awful, isn't it?
You're just like, "Mate, come on.
Oh, stop. Well, yeah.
Keep this rolling."
Yeah.
If somebody does really well, quick gap in between, bring the next person.
Yeah.
Normally I'll do first half, I'll do crowd work, have a suss out what's happening,
yeah,
the material off what they're giving me.
Yeah.
Second half, if I'm just bringing somebody on after like 5 minutes, I'll just do a big crowd of material that'll relax them, let them know the show's back.
Yes.
And then bring your headliner. And then if somebody dies, you got to do a few minutes. You got to bring the energy back.
And that was a masterclass in emceeing by Mr. Jaron Matthews.
Yeah, it's not fair to bring somebody up on no energy.
Oh, no, it's lousy, and you're failing as emceeing.
Or,
so emceeing is actually
down
a lot of work.
If you're down on your hole, tell them you're down on your hole, and then get the guy up and be like, "Look,
please save us here, will you?
Please save us here," or just be like, "Look, obviously, I'm just like, I'm going to bring somebody funny up now," and that usually gets a laugh.
Yeah,
because you're just like, "Look, this is not going well for me." Which thankfully hasn't happened in a while, but if it does, and it will happen again.
And it will happen again, of course it will, there's no denying it.
Because one of the things that always broke my heart was I get to gig with some amazing comedians anywhere I go. I've gigged with guys like Steve Hughes and Ardal O'Hanlon and,
oh, yeah,
and
great.
Neil Denimer, all great. And then you talk to them and you're just thinking to them, you know, oh, you must never die. And they're like, I die all the time.
I die all the time.
And you're like, what?
Yeah.
But you've been doing this for like...
It's such a relief to hear it, isn't it? But
also worrying. You never get past death.
You never get to a point where you're like, I am never going to die. Yeah. Well, maybe that's why it stays interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe if you were like complacent and comfortable, maybe it's that thing of it's safe and maybe it's not so good anymore.
But as I said to you, the two times that I've ever gotten anywhere confident about comedy, I've had two deaths after, which was a good kick in the arse.
I used to do this show called Pony Panto. It was a big Christmas show. It was great. Anyway, if you know it, you know it. And if you don't know it, I can't fill you in now. But I work with a brilliant musician, Donald Scullion. Actually, we do lots of different stuff. And he said at the last Pony Panto, he said, sorry, this is such a long-winded intro for quite a short point, but it's valid. He said, oh, I wasn't really nervous going on anymore. And then he's like, he wasn't that interested in doing it when he wasn't feeling nervous.
So no, thought, oh, less of a buzz.
We've gone a bit safe, and he stopped caring. I thought, oh, that kind of sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know that? He was just so relaxed going on that he's like, oh, we're not really pushing any, but we've got a bit safe here. Yeah.
That makes sense. It's all yeah. That buzz.
But it's also like, what are you... Because you're either making stuff because you have stuff to say, you have stuff to express, you want to be doing it for the sake... You just want to be doing something cool for the sake of doing something cool, or else you want to be making money. And if you're not making money, it's got to be cool. And if you're not making money and it doesn't feel cool, absolutely drop it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're doing two things wrong.
You're doing two... Well, I mean, one thing amiss is okay, but you're doing two fat things wrong. Get off.
Yeah. It's so weird as well, because I still really love... Like, thankfully, I've got to a point where I can do nice paid gigs and I get to do theatres, and it's really lovely.
Lovely.
But I will still absolutely throw myself... Like, people talk... Here in Belfast, listeners, the first place I ever did a gig was a comedy club on a Monday night in Belfast called The Pavilion.
Oh, I've done it!
The Pavilion is an open mic, and it is the best training ground
for
comedians.
I have done it twice, and I have two very different experiences.
Yeah, I say to people... Whenever I came back from... I was over in Southeast Asia, and I came back, and I got this idea. I was like, fuck, I'm really good at that. I headlined all of that, and I'm just like, no, hang on a second.
No, hang on a minute.
Don't get ahead of yourself. And I went to the Pavilion. And did a Pav. And it went well, but it was good to be like, stay humble, dickhead. Because once you start getting ahead of yourself, you're not funny anymore.
Yeah.
So I was really, really,
it's a really,
really
nice club, and Luke McGibbon rubs it, and he rubs it? Runs it.
He rubs it also.
He rubs it. He rubbed me.
Rubbed me up the wrong way.
He's great and he's lovely. He's a great comedian because the last time I was there, someone pulled out, so he got up and God, he did a brilliant few minutes. So it is a really nice club, but it is weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's training ground. It can go brilliant, it can go horrible, but just have to come off and go. We always talk about a joke of if you get it sort of like a bit of a giggle at the Pavilion, it's solid gold. Like people come off and go, oh, that didn't work, I'm not going to keep that. I'm like, no, keep that.
Anyway, the moral story is go to the Pavilion Comedy Club on a Monday because it is trippy. It's great.
Cool. It's so unpredictable.
Oh, it's cool.
I think let me see, it's a £5 in or £4 in. And
it's £3 in, Darren. The last I saw, when I'm playing, it's only £3.
For students.
Oh, is it £4 in then, is it?
Yeah. £3 for students.
And there's also a raffle. You can win a tenner's worth of drink at the bar.
You can. And they also have that beer of the month special, which is pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Go to the Pavilion. But yeah, Belfast has become a really good thing for comedy.
Yeah.
So, but as well as that, so like I can advertise the comedy nights anytime. Give me a bit of the more of the alternative for Belfast, because you're in with the circus crowd, the cabaret crowd. Where are they? I mean, you're doing like the Strand Cinema here in East Belfast.
Oh, I do half a cabaret, and that happens every few months. That's in the Strand, and you wouldn't know what kind of lineup you get up in that. Adam Turkington of Seedhead Arts produces that. I love that gig because it's in the cinema. If you haven't been to Strand, go to the Strand. I'm looking at your phone like I'm talking to your audience there.
It's fine. It's a lovely old cinema.
That was a message to the listeners, not just to telling you, Darren. It's great. So we have that and music, comedy, circus, whatever. Adam gets, he knows everyone and he gets all sorts of stuff. And that next one is February 7th. Plug, plug, plug.
Cool.
And then Sarah Furby, I'm doing a gig with her. She is running the cabaret on the 14th in the Strand. She just messaged me saying, will you do it? And I said yes, but I actually haven't a clue what's going to be in that, but I know it's going to be good.
Is it a cabaret? Because I know Sarah runs does she work with the Coven Comedy Club?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the Coven Comedy Club. Actually, I don't know. Actually.
I don't know. The Coven is the latest.
And often she does stuff in the 343 in Nerds Road, which is really, I haven't been in it yet. That's a cool venue.
Yes, I know one of the. I recorded a podcast in there with Tour Alaska, Jerry Norton.
Ah, that was in there, yeah.
Yeah, because it's the old tech building.
No, you're thinking of the vault.
Damn it.
Damn it, Dan. Get it together.
Oh, sorry, 343 is Collinswater.
Yeah.
Yeah, got it.
Well, they're down the road from each other. 343 is a real small venue.
Yeah.
Like, queer-focused. And then the vault is the artist studio that was the old tech that's now full of 100 artists. And cool. I was there for a while. I was an original member, but I had to go. I had to leave because I started college again. Yada, yada, yada. But anyway.
Busy woman.
Busy woman. I like to be busy. Busy making no money and doing nothing.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But it keeps you out of the house. Like, you don't get bored.
I know, but I need to kind of get it together a bit. Anyway, we digress.
That's okay. I mean, at least if I said you get back in the kitchen. I mean, the comedy kitchen. So you don't have to be mad at me. It's grand. I mean, you're in the house anyway. Might as well be in the kitchen. Producing a comedy show.
Yes, Darren. Fine.
See? I think I brought that back well.
You did. You just saved it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the point. It's like, it's getting uncomfortable. She's about to punch me. And then she goes, oh. You mean my project that we're referencing?
I'm about to punch you. I know. You're just making bad jokes. Because you're a kind of mediocre comedian.
I'm getting them reliable. Out of the way. I'm getting them out of the way now. Because I have a show tonight.
You have a show tomorrow. Are you looking forward to it?
I can't wait. It's like 550 tickets sold.
Wow.
The Millennium Forum is massive. It's a big...
I know. I was in it. It's ginormous.
It's lovely.
I said something and then I snuck in to see Christy Moore play in the main space because I was doing a workshop in another space or something.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. There you go. That's my story about the forum.
It's a very nice spot.
Yeah.
So you're at it, but you didn't pay.
I just got to see one song and went again. Why did you have to take it there, Dan?
Christy's not as good anymore. You can't buy drinking.
Yeah.
Do you not know that? He stopped drinking, so you're not allowed to have drinks in the venue anymore. He closed the bar and he's on.
I've seen him a good few times. Where I was in Oxford randomly on a Tuesday night and I saw him there in Oxford, New England. But he does this great thing where people start, well, they're a very quiet crowd, but I've seen him where people start clapping along and he goes, listen, sorry now, lads, first of all, the rhythm's wrong.
Yeah.
He's not saying like this, but he's like, don't join in for this one.
He's in, that's on his Live at the Point CD where he says that.
Oh, yeah. Like 94. But I've seen him live do that as well and he's just like, oh, yeah. Don't be at it.
What is it? He says, I spent a week writing this song and I feckin' listened to it.
I think he's brilliant. How do we get talking about him? Oh yeah, Millennium Forum, because you're playing there tonight. Yes. Yeah.
So getting all the crap jokes out of the way, because before I get up on stage and I think I'm emceeing tonight, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to be the recipient of them, Darren. No problem, anytime.
I mean, I'm glad to be the recipient of that lovely
team. Let's talk about me again. So Comedy Kitchen, can I plug this before
you? Yeah, plug it all, it's fine.
It's going to be every second Thursday of every second month, and the first one's on February 13th.
Right, so that's over
every second Thursday of every second month.
So February, the second month is April, February.
Yeah, yes, okay, and so on.
There. Gotcha.
Okay. Broadcast live on YouTube.
Okay.
Follow me on Instagram, Leonie Pony.
I'll put a link up to the kitchen as well.
And then, I'll be updating there because I have a really nice lineup for the first one.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I wanted you to introduce yourself, because you have Leonie Pony, which is what I initially knew you as, and then Leonie McDonough, when you added me on Facebook, and I'm like, so it's a performer's name, or was it the old pony dance thing?
It's like the old pony dance thing, Leonie Pony, and my Instagram is Leonie Pony, but I am Leonie McDonough. Like a stand-up, I'm Leonie McDonough, but I'm affectionately known as Leonie Pony. I suppose it's confusing, but you just have to know me as both.
What?
Maybe when you get friendly with me, you can call me Leonie Pony.
You are the first person I know called Leonie.
It's a good name, isn't it?
It is, aye.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, hang on, wait. Are you the first? No, you are, sorry. I was going to say, I used to work with a girl in Canada, but it wasn't Leonie, it's fine.
She was Naomi, or Leona. No, Leona. Or Leoncha is another one.
Leona, she was from Limerick.
Was she? Yeah, it's a good name. I like it.
I thought it was like a West of Ireland thing.
Hey, do you want to hear my sister's names? I know you have three brothers. I have three sisters, and we are called Melanie. This is the order we arrived: Melanie, Leonie, Amy, and Emily.
Dead on. It's Jane Austen level, isn't it?
Come on, it's a bit embarrassing. I'm like, Mom, come on. She's like, I like those names, and Dad had nothing to do with it. I don't care what they're called, as long as they're healthy. You can call it Spot.
Not a Sorka or a Fonsha or another. Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't do any of that.
This is my sister, Fonya.
No,
silver or gold?
Melanie,
no.
Leonie, Amy, Emily.
I remember chatting to this about my mum, and obviously after two kids, or she was like, there's the matching set, which was my two brothers, and then Catholic marriage mistake number one shows up, Darren, and then I was like, why did you call me Darren?
And
she just went, I just like the name. I was like, loads of thought went into this, obviously.
Here, my mother, because Melanie, myself, and Amy are close enough in age, and then I was 13 when Emily, the youngest, was born, so she was definitely.
Yeah.
And I remember saying
a Friday night after a couple of pints.
After, and I don't want to think about it. Please don't be saying things like that. Can just let me finish my joke here, right? And I said to my mother, I said, "Hey, mom, that sounded a bit American there. I didn't call her mom. What did I call her? Mom, was Emily an accident?" And my mother sighed and said to me, "Oh, Leonie, you were all accidents."
Brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, nice one.
I love that.
Yeah, but it's true, isn't it?
I know, but it's so the Irishness of the. Don't be getting ahead of yourself. Yeah. You weren't fucking special.
I was like, oh, I'm special, but Emily's a bit of a mistake. Yeah, yeah. No, you're all big fat mistakes. Yeah,
we didn't write this on a calendar.
My son was technically a mistake as well. He's an accident.
No, he's not.
No, he's not. He's a blessing at all. From Jesus. He's an absolute blessing. But it wasn't planned around then.
Yeah, like, I imagine not when you're in college. Most of the population.
Yeah, college broke. Still yeah. Broke. But anyway, rich in love, as we always say.
It's fine. Like, I don't have any kids myself that I know of. So.
That's a terrible. What? Overused joke.
I know. Yeah. I've been in lots of countries.
Maybe. So you'd wonder, would you?
Oh, that'd be so weird.
Oh!
That'd be terrible. Imagine I left a wee ginger lad in Australia.
Or Vietnam or Cambodia.
Thankfully not. That'd be terribly dangerous. So that's getting into Gary Glitter territory, that, isn't it? Like, so, yeah, yeah. Prison view. Okay.
Yeah, moving swiftly on, Darren.
It's fine. But the so you're coming from a house of four girls.
Yeah.
Is anyone else into the entertainments?
Well, Emily, the youngest, is a dancer. Circus. She's in Australia now working with Yuck Circus.
Wow.
Obviously I'm a bit biased because I'm her sister, but Emily is brilliant. Emily's the most fearless person I know. She's just, I'll do it, I can do it, I can do whatever. And physically, when we're dancing, you know, she's a nifty dancer, she's nifty performer. Physically, you say, okay, I want, can you just stand on the shoulders and fall over there? And Emily goes, yeah, fine. And then she does it.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've worked with other dancers and you're trying to workshop moves or like, oh, can you do a shoulder up and the shoulder, yada, yada. And they're kind of humming and hawing and dithering. And then Emily will come into the studio and we'll just pop up and do it.
See,
I don't know how she's so fearless, but she is. I don't know anyone as brazen as her, and I really admire it about her.
See, in my house, my oldest brother Gareth has just turned 40, and he just likes farm machinery. He's a big culty.
Yeah.
Loves tea. Oh.
Yeah, tea and farm machinery.
If tea could be addictive, he's
he's strung out now, is he?
He's strung out. He's kettles never stops in his house. And then my youngest brother is a bricklayer who plays football. So everyone's into sports in my house. But I'm obviously myself and my brother Declan are the middle children, so we're the attention seekers of it all.
And is Declan an attention seeker too? Because you definitely are.
He is, yeah.
And what does he do? What's he into?
Declan works for Tato.
Does he?
Yeah. And he drives a truck for Tato. But I've been trying to get him to do comedy, but I've mentioned it a few times.
Yeah.
He is very naturally funny. And he told me once that he's been writing bits and pieces, and I was like,
oh, good.
So I want to do it and get him to do a gig. So Declan, I know you listen to the podcast, so this is your own.
Come on, Declan. I really want to hear your stuff. You're come on, Declan.
But I did see him do...
You can do some Comedy Kitchen. Do a little warm-up. You can do like a Matthew's Brothers special in the Comedy Kitchen.
Because I know he did the... he did the speech at my brother's wedding.
Okay.
Best man speech.
How did that go?
The speech was great, but he was nervous.
Yeah, so
he's terrified.
See, there's one thing being funny, and then there's one thing being funny standing up in front of a load of people, because that is the hard part, isn't it?
Yeah, but I would say, even around my group of close friends, none of them can do what I do, but I would not say that I am the funniest person in the group.
Yeah.
But they work in group context. True. And yeah. I find that a lot with comedians. People are like, I'm not the funniest of my friends, but no one else can do what I do.
And I've also hung out with comedians who are great on stage, and then you afterwards, you're... perfectly sort of nice conversation. It's not like you had mad crack with them.
Comedians make me feel very normal.
Why do you say that?
Because there's a lot of weirdos.
Which there's weirdos everywhere.
I know,
there?
But I mean,
do you think comedy draws more than the usual industry? Yeah,
but there's probably people who do comedy. I suppose maybe in all the arts. I mean, you do circus performers and stuff, but that's
They're weird.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm allowed to say that because I know loads of them.
Yeah,
a lot of them are weird, but circus have a great sense of community more than any other art form.
Yeah,
they are super supportive of each other.
Yeah,
we have vowed to do this year with comedy. And you're really good at it, and I'm going to do the same, is be supportive of fellow comedians as opposed to feeling like you're in competition. But circus, they are brilliant for that.
But I've said that from working in different scenes in different cities. Anywhere that does really well, everyone's promoting each other.
Yeah.
So I've tried explaining the title, but maybe it's an Irishness where it's like, I'm not fucking helping that bollocks.
Yeah, I wonder.
No, if we all...
Or you just feel insecure, you feel threatened.
If we're pushing everybody, cool. If we're pushing everybody up the hill, it makes the top of it a bit easier to stand on, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I fully agree with you.
It's not a mountain peak, it's like Sugarloaf and Sligo. It's a big flat.
We can
all...
stand as loads of roofers.
Yeah.
Because there is room for everyone, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's great. I mean, obviously, especially here in the north, we suffered for having any arts for years and years and years because there was no funding, there was no fun now, but there's just sort of a big gap. But great art comes from conflict,
need,
from lower socioeconomic. Like I'm a punk, for God's sake. That came out of a reaction, anger, anything, just some emotion, which is what I think what's great for art, and it's great for comedy as well.
Yeah.
We're like, I'm telling you this is funny and tell me if you agree. But dance is the same. You're moving your body to express something, aren't you?
Yeah. You just have a need to do it, don't you? I find that it was just like, oh, I have a need to do this. And you feel a bit of satisfaction that you've done it.
Well, from my background, it came from playing drums. So I was making noise.
Yeah.
To being vocal and saying it. Would you think yours came from dance, which was a body movement, to vocalising it? Was there a progression?
Yes. Yeah, I think arguably, yes, there was.
Okay, so...
But dance is just... the thing with dance is it's just so much harder to produce. To make a dance show is so much harder logistically, financially, resource-wise, than stand-up comedy is. Stand-up comedy is a bit more resource-easy.
Yeah, but it's great if you... But at the same point...
But it's super effective as well when you're... Like we were talking about earlier about being smart about it.
Yeah, but the same point as I said to you before that... stand-up is easy to produce, but to produce a good show,
ooh, there's no less work in it.
Yeah, so I'm like, people start and you go, right, give me a list, what do you need first? And people go, comedians. I'm like, no, they'll be there, don't worry about them.
Yeah,
I want a light, I want a PA system, I want a good microphone, and you know what, I'm just like, these are important things. The room, shape of the room, where the bar is
massively important.
The psychology involved is incredible. People just go, you just put it in the corner of the pub. I'm like, you can't. So it's it's pretty nuts when you're trying to do that to produce anything, but we get to do nice theatres.
So
but with dance, you need everything. There's moving parts. There's
and
music,
sometimes
there's
with
huge.
Dance, sometimes in dance you start with whatever idea or initiative, but sometimes you rehearse it or develop it or develop the choreography so much that actually you lose all the initial stuff and you end up with a whole other different product. Whereas with stand-up comedy, that doesn't happen so much.
Mm-hmm.
That you can still stay. Obviously, it's because it's so instantaneous. You're staying true to the original input. But sometimes with dance, it just gets rehearsed to death.
Have you ever done a dance show that you're already sick of before you perform?
I remember very early on, one of the first Pony Dance shows, we made a show and it was all great. And I think by the seventh time we did it, we're near the end. I'm doing my 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm doing a certain choreography. I remember thinking, I am bored out of my mind doing this. And I've only done it 7 times, but we'd rehearsed it for weeks. And I swore to myself, I thought, I'm not making a show that I get bored in again. So the shows we made after that, obviously you have loads of dance, there's a lot of choreography, there's a lot of rehearsed set material, but there's always room to play. There's always that room to play. And I guess stand-up is like that. You know, like we talked about having, like, we have your rehearsed routines, these are my jokes, but there's room to play because you're interacting with an audience.
Yeah.
You have to allow for what happens when you're live.
The other one as well is, you talk about getting bored. I find myself where I know when I have to ditch material, because if I'm bored, I'm not selling the material.
Yeah, it has to go then, doesn't it?
It's not getting the reaction because the audience are like, well, you're not even trying.
Yeah, you don't even care about that anymore. That's not even real for you anymore.
Yeah, if I'm just autopiloting, just saying that, I'm not delivering it right. So in the context of the dance, the movement's off, the...
Yeah, you're just like, I'm bored doing it.
I'm bored.
I'm just
standing there talking and I don't give a shit about this bit anymore. But I'm going to say it again because I know it works. And then it doesn't work because I'm not trying.
Yeah.
So there's so many different factors in stand-up of, I've done this 50 times, why did that not work the 51st? And then you're like, well, you need to freshen it up, change it, or get rid of it.
Or you just need to bin it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in saying that, I did watch a brilliant interview with Jerry Seinfeld where I felt very lazy because I wasn't writing much. And someone said to him, what's the oldest joke you still do? He says, oh, I've got a joke I still do that's 10 years old. And I was like, yes, I haven't been doing comedy for 10 years. I can keep all of my stuff.
Yeah. Or you can always archive it and go back.
Oh, yeah.
Change as a person, because I'm only a couple of years doing stand-up, but I know some of my first jokes, I'm like, that is not relevant to me as a person at all. And you got to stay truthful. I remember talking to Martin Moore, you know him?
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Oh, he's great. He is so great. And it was actually in Australia I met him, and I had to give him a lift. I was collecting him and bring him somewhere. Anyway, yada yada. And I was quizzing, like I was bottling him on questions on stand-up, and he was so generous, and I'm ever grateful to him for it. But I remember him saying, and it's like, you know that saying in country music about three chords and the truth? You got to be finding the truth.
Yeah.
You got to be going for that. So I know I have jokes that I go, I'm not telling them anymore because they're not relevant to what's going on for me, who I am now.
Yeah. Well, maybe when you're in scene, you're doing sort of more topical or flavour of the week stuff to keep people reference, and then you're like, I can't use that next week.
Oh, yeah, you can use that next week.
So it depends where you're going with it. But, I mean, stand-up plans apart from... I mean, you said you want to gig more this year. You want to share more of other people's work this year.
I'm going to do the Comedy Kitchen. Comedy Kitchen.
Anything else? You got any tours anymore? Because you were in America.
I was. I'm planning to go back to LA again in April because I went over, did a gig, went to see lots of other gigs because LA is really good for networking, as I've learned. Mm-hmm. And they're really good at going, yeah, come and do this. Yeah, meet this, do that. So if you have any sort of inroad at all, they're good. So I had a really good 10 days in LA. That was a really good experience. So I'm going to go back in April. And I'm doing gigs in Belfast. So I'm doing Pug Uglies at the end of this month with Mickey Bartlett. And that's the 30th of January. I'm doing Lavery's on the 19th. I'm back down the Russian Dove in Galway on the 3rd of March. I'm doing a Carb Live in Galway on the 6th of March. That's a fundraiser for Cope. So I have a few. And then I'm just going to keep asking. That's my resolution, is to keep asking for loads of gigs.
Well, the other thing is as well, now that we're on the podcast, you'll have to come down and do Newry. And
I would love to do Newry.
And the new Sunflower Comedy Club in Belfast.
And I would love to,
Because we have, what's that going to be? Sunflower's going to be last Sunday of every month.
And I'm looking for, last Sunday of every month.
Yes.
And I'm doing Errigal at the end of March as well. That's the last Friday of every month.
That's a good gig. And then we're going to do, McCooey's is the last Saturday of every month.
Oh man,
It's anytime anyone gets paid, we put on a gig because they can afford to come.
Woohoo!
Which is the main thing. And Newry's good because you can bring a carrot and we give you pizza at halftime.
No way, do you?
Yeah, we do.
When you come to Comedy Kitchen, I give you loads of free drink.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Right, when's the next one? When am I on?
Well, as I told you, darling, it's every second Thursday of every second month, so you can do any of the gigs you like.
Okay.
But also, if you live in Belfast, you can follow me on Instagram, DM me, and you can be in the live audience.
Oh, yeah.
And I will ply you a drink and you'll have a great time.
Okay, so... Comedy Kitchen, that's...
What a great offer. As my dad says, you're not going to get a better offer than that.
Very true. Yeah, cool. I mean, Leonie, I think we've covered most of the bases. We've had deep philosophical chats about comedy. And
yeah, it's interesting to talk about it, isn't it? I love talking to other comedians about it because everyone has a slightly different approach and different notions about it.
Yeah, hopefully people that are listening to this who aren't comedians as well will have some sort of idea as to the mental torture we put each other through. And mostly ourselves.
Mostly ourselves, yeah.
Yeah. So when you're starting ready to go on, it's just, mm-hmm. But...
Yeah, of course it is. And because lots of people say to you as well, they go, oh, I couldn't do that, or how do you do that? And I love when people say that because that makes me go, yeah, God, I'm so brave, I'm so great, am I? But there's lots of things that I would never do.
My main point is I don't know how to do it, but I just keep doing it, so...
But is it just in your nature to do it?
Maybe.
It's just in your nature, the middle child thing. Eamon Maguire has a brilliant, you know Eamon Maguire, she has a brilliant song about being a middle, she's marvellous. And I wonder, is it just, people say, oh, I don't know how you do that, but it's like, oh, it's just strokes for folks, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you a good one, and I love asking comedians this, because everyone's got such weird and funny answers. What was your first thing in front of an audience? Dancing, or what was your first performance where you had to do something in front of a crowd?
I think it was dancing.
So you've been dancing for years and years.
I've been dancing for years and years, like as a kid. So I think it was dancing. I used to go to speech and drama for a while as a kid as well. So there would be competitions. So you have to stand up and say a poem, and I used to win those. These are very small scale. But I remember getting a couple of gold medals for how I recited a poem and thinking, this feels good.
We had the school fish, and it was...
No, I never had those, but yeah, no, we used to have those famous.
In Newry Town Hall, and it was 400 children saying the same poem with an adjudicator. They must have wanted to...
I mean, that is painful, isn't it?
Throw themselves in the river. Although, fun fact, I am one of the only people to win the Fesh 2 years in a row.
Oh, Darren Matthews, well done.
P3 and P4.
You really are something special.
I know. And then, so what they would do would be...
P3, so how old are you then? Seven?
Seven? It was a poem called I Was Just. See the shit I remember.
But the thing is that you were doing it from age 7.
Sort of, but
you you got a grow for it from age 7.
Yeah, but I did that. But the funny part of that was when you win your primary school year, what they then do is, I think it runs from P3 to P7. They'll get the 4 people that were in it, and then you were brought back for like a final. It was like the Champions League of the fish. And you had to do another bit. So
and
it was,
how did you do then?
I never won that. Two years in it, I didn't get past the group stages, but
you got in.
But my first thing that I ever did was performing for like an adult audience, which is always a good laugh, when I was like 11 and my grandmother was massively proud of me. I used to read at mass.
Oh, yeah.
First reading, but it was that one where it used to always be an adult, so people were like, why is the child going to this? So I'd get my mum's little missile. Not a missile, I know I'm from South Armagh, a missile, which was like a little copies of the readings for the year.
Yeah.
And I'd rock up. But like stand-up, when you get cocky, it goes wrong. So I used to read over it on Saturday night to make sure there was any words I didn't know. And then the one week that I didn't read over it, I hopped up on the stage, altar.
Yeah.
Got up on the altar, opened the book. There was a lot of big words.
Well, you rumbled.
I was rumbled. It was like, there was a letter to the Ephesians.
You are so...
King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon was... Oh, bastards. So I got rumbled and then
I can't remember the last time I was at Mass. I have memories of it be dragging a Sunday out of Grandma's.
I can, but it was... they've changed the words, so I couldn't join in anymore. I used to be able to autopilot Mass. You go at Christmas.
Were you an altar boy and all that?
No, my brothers were altar boys. I never did altar boy. I sang in the choir.
Well, I remember that girls weren't allowed, and then I remember it changing that they used to let girls be altar servers.
They had to, so it was an altar server, so they just couldn't get the numbers.
Well, no, it used to be just altar boy. I mean, you think
well, it was like the priesthood. It was like the priesthood itself.
The whole thing is so backward. Oh, I can't stand it.
Yeah, and you're from Galway, where they did some of the worst shit ever. Let's not start that one.
Anyway, I won't darken their door ever again. I'll tell you that much.
This is a comedy podcast.
Let's not go there.
The point I was making was my first live captive audience was me reading someone else's work
at age 7. Hey, do you think that some stand-ups come into performing they haven't been reading poems to audiences from age 7? They come into it very late in life just as a way to say something, because they're do you feel that they're unlikely characters with very unlikely backgrounds?
Yeah,
that they're like, I've been bullied, I've been unheard, and I want to be heard.
Yeah,
do you think there's a bit of that? There's that in when people come, not just stand up, but to all art forms, they're like, oh, let me just express myself here.
Well, I think from that point of view, it's that, well, maybe I always had an outlet doing something when I was younger.
Yeah, but some people have never had an outlet and they're dying for an outlet.
Yeah, but then sometimes those people shouldn't do stand up as well. Yeah. But at the same point, I would never ever say to them, well, someone that you shouldn't do something.
No, you know,
like,
I would
try.
That word should is awful, yeah, isn't it?
Exactly.
I can't stand that word. Avoid using it at all.
So if you do want to try stand up, we can leave it on that. If you do want to do stand up, go do it.
Yeah, go do it. But hey, you better work really hard. Don't just think because you're funny you can rock up on stage. Because I've made that mistake. My big fat ego will go, oh, Leonie, everyone laughs at you. You're so much crack. You're just the best crack. You've been performing for years. You're crack. You know what? You just still have to work at it, don't you?
Well, how did you... What, was your first gig good or okay or possible?
My first gig was really good because I rehearsed like hell, and I was with my great friend Paul O'Reilly, who's a comedy legend, and I worked with her in Pony House for years. She knows comedy inside out, and I was literally down in her kitchen holding a wooden spoon practicing my set again and again and again. And my first gig was really good. And then I thought, I had this in the bag. And then I think I did Thirsty Thursdays with you in the Crescent.
Yeah.
And I had one reliable joke that worked. And then I did all the new stuff that I'd just kind of written that day. None of it worked. And I went, ah, okay. So, Leonie, you have to.
Yeah, right. So my first gig was passable. It was all right. Because it was what I had initially written.
Yeah.
Second gig was a true death.
True. I think it's that kind of the thing. Graham Watson talks about his first one went off. His second one was... Jeez, why the hell am I up here? How could I have gotten this so wrong?
So this is your warning. If you do want to try comedy, do work hard. Learn from our mistakes.
There's also that second show syndrome. When I do runs of shows, I'm really conscious of. Thursday night opened, I did the Rewilding Winter Cabaret there, just gone, and boom, because you've got first show energy and you're like, oh, you're nervous, and that goes really well. And then the next day you're like, we've got this down. But you don't have it down. You never have it down.
You never have it down.
You're never safe. You're never swimming.
This is your warning. Learn to tread water and be funny and you'll be fine.
Be funny. Paul always reckons that some people are funny and some people are not. Because I think you can learn comedy, you can learn the formulas, the craft, and she reckons you're either funny or you're not.
Yeah, well, those people are called drama students, so... Yeah. If you're doing comedy for extra credit in your second semester, fuck off, all right? You're just using up my stage there. Jesus Christ. Leonie, I'm going to let you go and prepare things or whatever the hell you're doing today.
Yeah, do what
I'm
going
to go and get organised to go up the road as well. So.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it's been good talking to you.
No problem. Did you enjoy this?
Yeah, I loved it. Cool. Come back and be in Comedy Kitchen.
I will message you the dates for the gigs you're going to be doing now. You're all
and I look forward to them.
Active
and
I'm going to
smash
gigs.
Them. I'll be really good.
No problem. So next Comedy Kitchen is when, so we can get you organised?
February 13th.
February 13th.
Subscribe to the YouTube channel because we need that apparently. It's a bit annoying, but can you please do it? Thanks very much. And oh yeah, follow me on Instagram, Leonie Pony. Leonie, cool. I think it's an underscore pony.
I will find it out and I will put links and stuff on when I post the
yes.
podcast. Okay?
Yeah, and hey, look, I'm going to do a quick video of our last moment.
Oh, okay. I'm
so gonna... that we're live recording, they'll hear this and then they'll see us talking.
Going to be Instagram, so this is
so
us.
So we're going to Instagram finishing our podcast.
So this is us recording it right now.
And that's our technical setup, which is pretty advanced.
This is like Inception. We're recording while recording.
Yeah, it's good. I'm going to put this on Insta maybe now.
Okay. Everybody follow me. Darren Matthews Comedy on Instagram.
Yeah, he's really nice.
And we have the podcast. It's Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends.
Oh, I just cut you off.
It's okay. It doesn't matter. If you like the podcast, they're already listening to it on the podcast.
It's the podcast is Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends.
Yes. If you've enjoyed this, guys, like, share, subscribe.
I've listened to a few of the other ones that are really good.
We will be back next week. I keep saying that, but then sometimes it's like 2 weeks. It doesn't matter.
Aren't you supposed to be consistent?
I'm definitely not consistent.
That's the hardest thing I find is
it'll
consistency.
Be grand. Right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Leonie McDonough, say bye-bye.
Oh, yeah, I'm just going to heat up some pasta. I thought we were over already.
We are.
I'm starving.
Say bye.
Oh, bye. Jesus. Bye. See you again.